Your lines are live.
Hello, my name is Tom Pelton, and I'm Director of Communications for the Environmental Integrity Project. Welcome to our press teleconference for the release of two reports. One is called Poultry Industry Pollution in the Chesapeake Region, and the second is Poultry and Manure Production on Virginia's Eastern Shore. The Environmental Integrity Project is an 18-year-old nonprofit, nonpartisan organization based in Washington, D.C., that is dedicated to enforcing environmental laws to protect public health. Both of these reports that we're releasing today are available on our website, www.environmentalintegrity.org. Today, we're going to have four speakers, and then we're going to take questions from reporters. The first speaker is going to be Abel Russ, Senior Attorney with the Environmental Integrity Project. Next, we'll have Betty Nicholas, Executive Director of Waterkeepers Chesapeake. Then we'll have Sue Mastel, President of the Virginia Eastern Shore Clean Water Council. And finally, Ted Evgenitis, the Lower Susquehanna Riverkeeper. We also have on the line today and available for questions, Mariah Lamb, the EIP data analyst, who is the main author of our report on Virginia's Eastern Shore and its poultry industry, and Kathy Phillips, the Assateague Coast Keeper. So we'll start off with Abel Russ. His name is spelled A-B-E-L-R-U-S-S. He's senior attorney with the Environmental Integrity Project and a co-author of our report on poultry industry pollution in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Go ahead, Abel.
Thanks, Tom. Yep, my name is Abel Russ. I've been with EIP for about 10 years now. I'll start with a brief background about agriculture and the Chesapeake Bay TMDL. As I'm sure everyone knows, the success of the Bay TMDL depends on agriculture because agriculture is the largest source of nitrogen and phosphorus entering the bay each year. But so far, most of the pollution reductions have come from the wastewater sector, and specifically 84% of the nitrogen reductions and 74% of the phosphorus reductions since 2009 have come from sewage treatment plants and industrial polluters. Agriculture, by contrast, has done very little so far. Between 2009 and 2018, the agricultural nitrogen load declined by 3.5 million pounds. That might sound like a lot, but it's only about 3% of the 2009 load. So since 2009, agricultural nitrogen loads have been declining by about 0.3% per year. By contrast, between now and 2025, the ag sector is going to have to reduce its load by a further 36 million pounds, and that's 30% of 2018 loads, or that's a rate of about 5% reduction per year. The wastewater sector has done its part. Those reductions are made, and it's hard to do much more with that sector. And so the nitrogen pollution reductions that still have to be made are going to have to come, for the most part, from agriculture. And according to the Bay State's own watershed implementation plans, 82% of the remaining reductions are going to have to come from agriculture. And, you know, again, this sector is not even remotely on track. Nitrogen loads have been declining by 0.3% per year. That's going to have to increase to 5% per year. So agriculture is going to have to work 15 times harder over the next several years, or we won't reach the 2025 targets. So to shift to the reports, the two reports we're talking about today focus on a big and important subset of the ag sector, and it's the poultry industry. The first report looks at the nitrogen pollution load from poultry across the Bay watershed, and that's what I'm going to talk about. We, at a high level, we estimate that the poultry industry generates about 24 million pounds of nitrogen each year. That's 24 million pounds of nitrogen delivered to the Bay, what the Chesapeake Bay program would call delivered load or edge of tide load. And this means that the poultry industry is responsible for roughly 9% of the total nitrogen load from all sources. Of that 24 million pounds, about half comes from what we think of as runoff, nitrogen from land-applied poultry manure that washes off of crop fields or travels through shallow groundwater and gets into the tributaries to the bay and ultimately to the bay itself. The other half, the other 12 million pounds, comes from ammonia, which is a gaseous form of nitrogen that emanates from poultry confinements and poultry manure. This is a source of pollution that gets much less attention than it should, in my experience. Every year, the poultry industry emits thousands of tons of ammonia, and a large fraction of that ammonia comes back down not far from the source, depositing on land or water surfaces in the watershed and adding more nitrogen to the system. The models that the Bay Program use don't generate estimates of this load, at least not directly. They don't spit it out in the kinds of load summaries you might see on the internet. Instead, ammonia that deposits on land gets attributed to whatever land use it lands on. So if ammonia lands on a crop field, it will get lumped in with agriculture. But if it lands on forest, it gets lumped in with forest. And if it lands on the tidal waters of the Chesapeake Bay, it's called deposition on tidal waters. So what that means is that the original source of the ammonia is obscured, and it's very difficult to figure out where it came from. For this report, we made an effort to do that by patching some things together. The methods are described in detail in the report, but very briefly, we worked with an expert consultant to extract from the Bay Program modeling outputs county-level nitrogen load attributable to ammonia deposition from any source. And then we used the EPA's National Emissions Inventory to estimate, again at the county level, how much of that ammonia likely came from poultry. Now, we also had to make some adjustments. The Bay Program is a little bit outdated when it comes to ammonia emissions, and so we adjusted our estimate to account for more recent science. The major adjustment ends up being for broiler chickens, which is the largest source of ammonia emissions within the poultry sector. And we described this in an earlier report, summarized it again in this report, but the EPA models are currently using an outdated ammonia emissions estimate based on European broiler operations from years ago. And we now know, based on a rich scientific literature documenting ammonia emissions from American broiler barns, that ammonia emissions are roughly twice as high as EPA has historically assumed. And this is in large part because the American broiler industry is finding ways to grow bigger and bigger birds every year, and larger birds emit more ammonia. We also made minor adjustments to other types of poultry, and in the end, we adjusted our estimate of the nitrogen load from poultry ammonia upward by about 10%. All of that's described in the report. But again, at the end of the day, 24 million pounds, half from runoff, half from ammonia. So clearly the poultry industry is a large part of the Bay's nitrogen problem, and it will have to step up to become a bigger part of the solution. But I want to shift gears a little bit and also talk about another impact that the industry is having, and that's the air quality impact on local communities. Our report profiles people in Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Virginia whose quality of life and property value have been destroyed by industrial poultry operations. And ammonia isn't the only problem in these situations, but it is a big part of the problem. We all know that ammonia smells bad. That right there is enough to justify community concerns. If people can't spend time on their porch or keep their windows open, they have a real problem. But it's not just the smell. Ammonia is also toxic. It causes eye, nose, and throat irritation. It causes adverse respiratory symptoms. And according to federal health agencies, the short-term threshold for these impacts is lower than the odor detection threshold, which means that if you can smell it, it's already at and above toxic levels. And believe me, if you live near these operations, you can smell it often and intensely. But it can be toxic at levels that you can't even smell. So this is a problem that people are dealing with every day. They know for sure that they're dealing with it when they can smell it. They know they're dealing with it when they are having respiratory symptoms. But it's something that state and federal health agencies haven't worked hard enough to address. And so I'll just pivot real quick to some of the conclusions of our report and then pass this off to Tom to talk about a few other issues. One thing that we recommend is that the Chesapeake Bay states reevaluate whether dense concentrations of industrial poultry operations make sense for communities in the Bay watershed. The neighbors, the people who lived here and didn't come to the nuisance in legal parlance, they were there first, and then these industrial operations moved in, and their lives were really upended. They will tell you that, no, these dense concentrations of CAFOs are not consistent with a good quality of life in the Bay. They're not necessary. It's not how we used to do agriculture, and we should be really thinking holistically about how to shift the trajectory here. The other thing we recommend is more monitoring because, as I said before, people can be affected by ammonia at levels that they can't smell, and there's very little monitoring to tell people when the ammonia is safe or unsafe near these operations or, you know, in general. We also need more monitoring to help us understand better the pathway of ammonia to the Chesapeake Bay and, you know, the extent to which ammonia emissions are contributing to nitrogen loads. We also need better ammonia emissions estimates from EPA, and we really need air pollution controls at these operations. If they are going to exist, they have to do something to make life easier for their neighbors. There are things like biofilters, ways of reducing emissions from the CAFOs. There are things to do about the emissions outside of the CAFOs, like planting forested strips that filter out the air a little bit before it gets to neighboring properties. And those are all things that should be required, frankly, if the industry isn't going to do it voluntarily. So I'm going to stop there. I'm happy to take questions later, and I'll pass it back to Tom.
Thanks very much. That was Abel Russ, A-B-E-L-R-U-S-S, Senior Attorney for the Environmental Integrity Project. I'm Tom Pelton, Director of Communications for the Environmental Integrity Project. I'm going to take a few moments here to describe our second report, Poultry and Manure Production on Virginia's Eastern Shore, which is available on our website, www.environmentalintegrity.org. We took one look at the overall Chesapeake Bay region. That was the report Abel was just talking about now. And then we focused in on Accomack County, Virginia, on the Eastern Shore, because there's been an extreme level of growth in poultry houses there over the last 6 years. In 2014, Accomack County on the Eastern Shore of Virginia had only 254 chicken houses. By December of 2019, that number had nearly doubled to 480 chicken houses. Those facilities produce over 85 million birds per year with manure output of about 137,000 tons. Unfortunately, that is so much manure, it is overloading the capacity of cropland on the Eastern Shore to successfully use those nutrients for crop growth, and it's leading to runoff into waterways, which is harming water quality. We took a look at the water quality on the Eastern Shore. We looked at Virginia Department of Environmental Quality water quality monitoring data for 82 stream and river monitoring locations, and we found that about 22% of the monitoring locations over the last 4 years had levels of E. coli bacteria that would be unsafe for swimming or water contact recreation. About 21% of the rivers and streams had levels of bacteria that would be of Enterococcus bacteria that would be unsafe. Some of this is likely being caused by the overapplication of manure and the poultry industry. Some of it could be caused by wildlife as well. So we want to make sure we are clear about that. But we also saw perhaps the most disturbing part of our report was the lack of enforcement by the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality. We looked at 76 poultry operations for which we could get records from 2017 through 2019, and we found that 56 of these 76 operations, or 74% of the poultry operations, had some kind of a violation over this two-year period. Often it was for missing or incomplete paperwork, unsanitary disposal of dead birds, or improper handling and disposal of manure. And these are all serious problems, because if you aren't keeping good records and you aren't reporting to the state doesn't know how much manure is being applied, doesn't know if there's an overapplication problem and or a pollution problem. If you're not handling your birds properly or the manure properly, that can cause a real public health problem. So we found no penalties, no financial penalties by the state of Virginia at all, despite these violations of 74% of the poultry operations. So one of our conclusions is the state of Virginia should do a better job of enforcing environmental laws, more monitoring of our rivers and streams, and put a little more pressure on the local farmers to comply with the law. Next, we're going to turn it over to Betsy Nicholas, Executive Director of Waterkeepers Chesapeake, to get the big picture on the Bay and how it's doing on today, Earth Day, the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. Betsy Nicholas, B-E-T-S-Y-N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S, Executive Director of Waterkeepers Chesapeake. Go ahead, Betsy.
Thanks, Tom. And today should be a day of celebration on the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. And there's a lot to celebrate in terms of water quality and improvements from how things looked back in 1972 when we passed the Clean Water Act and we had rivers on fire. The huge laws that we passed after that first Earth Day of the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act have made a tremendous difference to our environment. But what's happened is they have not continued their progression forward and are not adapting and adding new protections, new regulations, and new requirements based on changes in populations, in practices, in densities. And that's where we really run into problems. So taking the poultry industry, as Abel mentioned, agriculture is the largest pollution source in the Chesapeake watershed. And the Chesapeake Bay is a national treasure. It's the nation's largest estuary. The states of Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Delaware have thriving populations of people who live in this area because of the beautiful waters, both the streams and the rivers that feed the bay and the bay itself. But that entire economy and system is based on the need and the requirement for healthy, clean waterways. And we're not doing all that well in that area. Over 60% of our waterways still have pollution problems and are not meeting water quality standards. So with big laws like the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, we regulate point sources where we can target specifically what's coming out of the end of pipe. But what's really been left behind is the non-point sources, the stormwater, agricultural runoff, and those areas are just increasing in intensity and having a greater and greater pollution load over time. And the most dramatic example of this is things like ammonia emissions from poultry. There are no permit limits on this, and there's not even any monitoring of what's going on. We can't possibly address the problem and fix it if we're not even watching it. So as a basic starting point, we need to start monitoring this. There are very considerable public health risks as well as water quality impairments associated with these emissions, and we can't properly regulate it if we're not monitoring it at all. So that's something that we really need to start getting on board with right away if we're going to maintain the waters of the Chesapeake and coastal bays and ensure that we have them for the productive crab, oyster, fishing, and other opportunities in the future, but also to ensure that we have healthy communities in these regions and that we're not exacerbating health effects. So the Chesapeake Bay cleanup plan has been very successful in a lot of ways, but it's lacking in others. And as pointed out in the report, there's not enough information on the ammonia emissions that was taken into account when determining these loads. The nitrogen load that comes in our waterways from ammonia deposition is significantly greater than was included in that plan. And so it means if we're meeting all of our other requirements for the Bay Cleanup Plan, we're still going to have a nitrogen problem from ammonia emissions until we start to regulate it and quantify it and figure out what are the correct restrictions to put in place. So while I want us to be happy and celebrate our successes from these key environmental laws and from our Earth Day that began 50 years ago, we still have a long way to go in getting local level protections and ensuring that we're monitoring and regulating all of the key pollutants in our waterways and ecosystem. And I'll be happy to take any questions later.
All right. Thanks so much. That was Betsy Nicholas, BETSYNICHOLAS, Executive Director of Waterkeepers Chesapeake. Next, we'll have Sue Mastel, President of the Virginia Eastern Shore Clean Water Council. Her name is spelled S-U-E. M-A-S-T-Y-L. Go ahead, Sue.
Thanks, Tom. And you get extra points for pronouncing my name correctly, so thank you for that.
Oh, great.
I first want to thank the Environmental Integrity Project for both of these reports because we have for a long time been very concerned about the explosion of the poultry operations here on the shore and in Accomack County specifically. And one of my sort of pet peeves has been that in addition to focusing on these huge operations, which if you have a chance to actually come and look at these 24 and 26 house operations, it's kind of mind-boggling. But in addition to the actual locations where we have to be concerned about whether they're doing everything right, and the report outlines they're not, we also have to be concerned about where the manure goes, because most of it does not stay at the poultry farm. It is transported to other crop farms here on the shore and in some cases elsewhere in Virginia as well. And we have up until now had very little information about where those locations are or how that's being handled. So, you know, I'm really appreciative that the Environmental Integrity Project has taken the first step with their FOIA documents to get a handle on this, because this is an important aspect that we need to focus on. There is some good news down the road, which the report does mention. The Poultry Litter Transport Program, which is part of the Chesapeake Bay Watershed Implementation Plan, does call for transporting the litter out of the county and off the shore. And the really good news with that is that it will require manure transport brokers who have to be certified and have to fill out paperwork about how much they're handling and where it's going and how it's being applied. So down the road, there is hope that we will have a better handle on this. Part of the problem with that is, as the report points out, that's still voluntary, and it requires funding from the General Assembly, which they've put some additional funding into it this year, although with the current economic situation, it's not clear how that's going to roll out. So we need to keep the pressure on that. We need to be pushing that because, as the report shows, we already have too much nitrogen and specifically phosphorus in our soils. We can't absorb any more, and so both the nitrogen and the phosphorus are running off at too high a level. The other thing that I want to highlight briefly, which is not in the report but is another issue that we are following closely, is the groundwater. We're on the eastern shore of Virginia. We're in a unique situation. We have a sole source aquifer for our groundwater. Obviously, we're kind of stuck here. We're out in the middle between the bay and the Atlantic Ocean and across an 18-mile bridge to Norfolk and Virginia. And so we have all the water we need and use, we get right here. And it is a confined aquifer, and these poultry operations use a lot of water. So we've been keeping a close eye on that, and there's some optimism that they're minimizing their usage, and we're encouraging them to go into our shallow aquifer, which is replenished on a much more rapid basis than our deeper aquifer. So there's concerns on a number of fronts with these poultry operations, and that's why we're really encouraged that this report is getting out and highlighting the issues that need to be followed up. So I'll stop there, but I'll be happy to take questions later. I'll turn it back
Thanks
to you.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Sue. That was Sue Mastel, president of the Virginia Eastern Shore Clean Water Council. Her name is spelled S-U-E-M-A-S-T-Y-L. Our final speaker today is Ted Evgenitis, the Lower Susquehanna River Keeper. His name is spelled T-E-D-E-V-G-E-N-I-A-D-I-S. Ted Evgenitis. Go ahead, Ted.
Thanks, Tom. Waste from agricultural livestock operations has been a longstanding concern with respect to contamination of water resources, particularly in terms of nutrient pollution. However, the recent growth of concentrated animal feeding operations, CAFOs, presents a greater risk to water quality because of both the increased volume of waste and to contaminants that may be present, like antibiotics and other veterinary drugs that have both environmental and public health importance. Based on available data and the findings of the report issued by EIP, generally accepted livestock waste management practices do not adequately or effectively protect water resources from contamination with excessive nutrients, microbial pathogens, and pharmaceuticals present in that waste. It's also unfortunate that Pennsylvania does not have water quality standards for non-point source pollution, being nitrogen and phosphorus. Most operations are only subject to the lenient and unenforceable recommendations found in Pennsylvania's Manure Management Manual. In fact, farmers who follow the manual are encouraged to over-apply manure in order to meet crop nitrogen needs based on optimistic estimates of crop yield with no consideration of cropping history, soil nutrient levels, or phosphorus runoff risk. There is very little oversight of these operations, manure applications, and it is likely that many fields receive even more manure than the manual would actually recommend. CAFAs are subject to more stringent nutrient management plan requirements and water discharge permits, but again, given the flexibility in nutrient management planning regulations and the limited degree of compliance monitoring and enforcement in Pennsylvania, operators following nutrient management plans may also be systematically over-applying manure to cropland. And once manure from CAFOs is exported to neighboring farms, the level of care with which it is land applied is significantly diminished, and the Commonwealth has no effective mechanism to track the transfer. Most of the time, the owners of these CAFOs aren't even farmers, but they can either be real estate tycoons or private corporations. And farming is different today than it was decades ago. You know, we're seeing now that, you know, the children of farmers, they're no longer taking over the multi-generational farming business like their parents and grandparents did, but we're seeing farmers selling off their land left and right to corporate bidders while that farmland is being gobbled up to be retrofitted at the expense of clean air and clean water. Out of all the Chesapeake Bay region states, Pennsylvania experienced the largest growth in poultry industry over the last decade. There was a 19% rise in broilers sold annually from the counties and PA section of the Bay watershed from 2007 to 2017. York and Lebanon counties have the highest growth rates, with York County's broiler industry growing by 87% over just this last decade, and Lebanon County experiencing a 73% growth in just the last decade as well. And the increase in factory farms means more manure and more waste running off into the Susquehanna River and eventually into the Chesapeake Bay. And Pennsylvania needs to do a lot more to regulate and inspect these industrial meat operations as our downstream communities are suffering because of this growth. Four Pennsylvania counties, Lancaster, Lebanon, Snyder, and Dauphin, are among the top seven biggest sources of poultry industry pollution in the Chesapeake Bay watershed, with Lancaster County being number one. Lancaster County's birds alone contribute 3.3 million pounds of nitrogen pollution a year to the Susquehanna River and Chesapeake Bay. And neighbors downwind from these operations suffer health and quality of life problems, as exemplified by the case of Brian Coltrider of York County, Pennsylvania, and that's highlighted on pages 22 through 24 of the pollution industry, for the poultry industry pollution report. So what should Pennsylvania do? Again, common sense limits on the density of mega-sized poultry factory farms would help, as well as the state starting to require air monitoring, air pollution controls, such as filters for particulate pollution on large new poultry houses, and the planting of trees and forested areas around these facilities to serve as buffers and filter this pollution. Monitoring of these current facilities must be improved, all while regulating their proximity to the public and our waterways. Obviously, water and public health cannot be jeopardized over corporate profits. Large poultry facilities and other CAFOs are a resource extraction industry, draining the wealth from communities and leaving behind polluted water, foul air, broken roads, and sick residents. The only ones who benefit from CAFOs are their CEOs and corporate stakeholders and shareholders who profit from polluting the environment, paying workers low wages, treating animals inhumanely, and devastating rural economies. And I'd be happy to take questions as well, Tom. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much. That was Ted Evgenitis. His last name is spelled E-V-G-E-N-I-A-D-I-S, Ted Evgenitis, the Lower Susquehanna Riverkeeper up in Pennsylvania. So now we're going to open it up for questions from reporters. For this part of the presentation, we're going to have Kathy Phillips on the line, the Assateague Coast Keeper. I had a watchdog on the Eastern Shore for many years, and Mariah Lamb, the EIP data analyst who wrote the Virginia Eastern Shore report. Melissa, tell the reporters how they can get in line to ask a question.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, that is star 1, and we'll pause for just a few moments for the Q&A roster. Actually, we just had someone come in. We have Amy Liu with WBOC.
Go ahead,
yes,
Amy.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. My only question here is in regards, I did reach out to one of our Delmarva poultry industry leaders here. My main question to them was essentially presenting them this report and asking their thoughts. They did get back to me. Their biggest thing here is that the report they claim focuses on, they even say sensationalist claims. It highlights only specific data that they say doesn't highlight, like doesn't even focus on overall trends. And they make the argument that they have seen overall reduction of pollution in terms of nitrogen in the Chesapeake Bay. So they're wondering, is all the facts here presented here true, I guess? I don't know if any of you guys have any comments to that.
Sure. Abel Russ with the Environmental Integrity Project, have we seen improvement from the farm sector?
Yeah, so, I kind of tried to hit this at the beginning, but everything in our report is based on information from the Chesapeake Bay program. So it's all true, at least as far as the
For some of our listeners out there, just because that is a joint EPA and state environmental agencies and all the major universities in our region collaborating in a scientific monitoring effort. But go ahead. So it's real data we used. Go ahead, Abel.
Yeah. And so it's based on a model that the Chesapeake Bay program uses, that everyone in the Bay watershed uses to assess progress with the TMDL. And like I said at the outset, the agricultural sector is not on track. They are making reductions, but very, very slowly, 0.3% per year for nitrogen, not nearly fast enough to meet the targets that the states have set for the agriculture sector. They're going to have to increase their level of effort by about 15-fold in order to get to the targets, which is really a Herculean task. Your question sort of suggested that we were cherry-picking numbers, but we weren't. We looked at the whole watershed, all of the poultry in the watershed as a whole. We weren't looking at anything in particular. We were looking at broad totals and broad trends. And I'm not sure what else to say about that. I think I saw an estimate somewhere that someone had cited, I think from the industry, that poultry operations contribute about 3% of the nitrogen total load. And I don't think that's accurate.
Purdue was claiming that, right, yeah.
Right. And so I think to put that number in perspective, I think one of the problems that I mentioned earlier is that the Bay program doesn't really spit out an ammonia total. So the amount of nitrogen that gets into the Bay from nitrogen that leaves the broiler confinements and other manure sources as ammonia doesn't get tabulated as a poultry source. So that part of it just isn't there. And to the extent that the industry is looking at the Chesapeake Bay program data and pulling out a number for the poultry industry, what that refers to is just the runoff total. And so according to my read of the 2018 Chesapeake Bay program model outputs, that's about 4.5% of the nitrogen total. Another 4.5% from ammonia, and you get 9%. Those are the real numbers. I think maybe Purdue is citing something from several years ago. I'm not sure where they get 3%.
Yeah, and also I want to add, this is Tom Pelton again, you know, some of the poultry lobbyists have accused us of cherry-picking. That is not true at all. For example, for our Virginia Eastern Shore report, we looked at all of the poultry farm inspection records, and we found 74% of the 76 operations had a violation of some kind. We weren't looking at one or two. We looked at all of them over a two-year period, so not cherry-picking. Kathy Phillips, do you want to address this issue of the poultry industry claiming they're making great progress?
Well, I think Abel handled that very well with getting the best out there. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay. Any other questions?
The next question on the line is from Gordon Rago with the Virginian Pilot.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Just a question about the fines associated with the inspection violations for the poultry farm from the DEQ 10 levy. Have you guys uncovered anything or had any discussions with the DEQ that would show that they have levied penalties in the past prior to 2017? And can you guys make any sort of estimations or gather any thoughts on to why these penalties aren't being imposed on farms that are found to be in violation of various inspections?
I would say to that you should ask DEQ why they're not penalizing operations. If you're not penalizing a polluter, they have no financial incentive to keep their operation clean. Mariah Lamb, the author of the report, Mariah, I think you communicated with DEQ, and what did they tell you? Essentially, over 2 years, no penalties?
Yeah, so for the purposes of our report, I was only looking at 2017 through 2019, and I did talk with Betsy Bowles from VDEQ about this subject, and for 2017 through 2019, there were no penalties. There were enforcement actions such as sending warning letters, but no civil penalties were imposed upon them in that time period.
And one of the letters, a couple of the letters probably, but definitely one I'm looking at right now that the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality sent to an operation with violations says that they could be penalized up to $32,500 per day for each violation. And yet Virginia is imposing no penalties at all over that two-year period. So they're really not doing enough to enforce the law.
Tom, this is Sue.
Yeah.
If I can jump in
ahead, Sue. Yeah.
A bit, because this is something that we've found very frustrating. And I think to their credit, with the governor's urging that DEQ is trying to look at, globally reevaluating their penalty structure, because we came up against this even with a violation, ongoing repeated violations of the Tyson plant in Temperanceville over a period of 5 years, where you have that $32,500, per day per incident, and yet they were initially fined with $16,000 for all violations over a 5 year period, where they were their lagoon was overflowing directly into a creek with all kinds of really bad stuff. Anyway, we actually got that up to $40,000, which is for a big operation like that is just paperclip money. Anyway, but there's a real it's a very complicated structure with DEQ's penalty structure, and so I've talked to a lot of the individuals at DEQ, and they're frustrated with it as well. And they're also up against the fact that most of these farmers work on very tight margins. There was one instance with the groundwater where they had a penalty in place because the guy had clearly violated, but they waived the penalty because he had no money, and it was just like, you can't put this guy out of business. So partly because of the way the whole industry is structured, the big money hides behind the way the industry is structured. So it makes it very difficult. But this is an issue that really would bear bringing some light to.
Thanks. That was Sue Mastel. Any other questions, Gordon?
Just going off of that, because I did reach out to DEQ. I haven't heard anything from DEQ yet. But so have they, Sue, maybe this is a question for you, but did they actually indicate or say, or have you heard that they are taking a look at sort of reevaluating how they impose penalties?
Well, my understanding is, and this is sort of peripheral to what my main focus is, but just in conversations, is that one of the things the governor did, I believe it was very early on, it might have been Executive Order 6, if I'm not mistaken, was to conduct a complete audit of DEQ, including their entire penalty structure. So I don't know exactly where that stands. I believe that there is a report in the works. Part of that is that they will come up against the fact that DEQ is chronically under-resourced, understaffed, and also there may be legalities in the way that their penalty structure is structured. So, but I do know that at least there are efforts being made. Secretary Strickler, this is one of his priorities. So, I want to give them credit wherever we can, but at the same time, obviously, we need to keep the pressure on them.
All right. Thanks, Sue. Gordon, any other questions?
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Next question.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, that is star one. And we have no questions in queue at this time. Actually,
okay.
Someone just joined, and that is Tim okay. Wheeler with Bay Journal.
Hi, guys. I didn't just join. I listened the whole way, but I just turned off my mute. I hadn't had a chance to read the report yet, but I know that MDE, Maryland Department of Environment, was supposed to be conducting some air emission monitoring at a couple of chicken houses. Has that started? Is that underway, or has that been delayed? Do you know?
Abel Ross, CIP.
Kathy.
Go ahead.
Tim, this is Kathy Phillips. They have set up a couple of monitors. Well, I should put it this way. We were given information of locations and that they were in the process of setting up these monitors. Now, that was just the week before everything started happening with the COVID-19 shutdowns. So
right.
I have not been able to actually get out into the field to confirm if those monitors are up or not. We did have some issues about the placement of the two monitors, and but again, without being able to get out into the field and actually, you know, get a better assessment on the ground of how they're placed and where they're placed, it's been very frustrating. And
what were your issues with them, Kevin?
Well, one of them was placed in such a way that, yes, there were a number of CAFOs, you know, within, say, like a one-mile radius of the location. But, again, we just had a sort of rough Google map with a dot on it. It looked like there was a lot of trees around that area, so I had wanted to actually get down there and just see how close they were to the tree line, if that was going to, you know, be an issue or not. You know, stay tuned.
Yeah,
and,
this is Abel. I just want to second what Kathy just said. I looked at some aerial maps too, and I had the same thought exactly. They sort of put the monitor in a place that would sort of resemble what we're advocating for, which is that you plant forested buffer strips around the CAFOs to give some kind of a buffer between the operation and the neighbors. They put the monitor in such a way that it's buffered on all sides by trees, and so it might detect some ammonia from those CAFOs, but it's certainly not anywhere near the worst case scenario on the eastern shore. There are plenty of places where there are homes, you know, surrounded by CAFOs in a 1 mile radius with no trees in between them.
And the other monitor, is it situated in a more open area, or do you not?
I don't think there is one.
Yeah.
I thought there were two.
Yeah, there was a second location, and that one seemed to be in an area that didn't have many CAFOs around it, and they were much further away. And if I could just clarify that this project that MDE partnered with Delmarva Poultry Industry and Keith Campbell Foundation to put these two single ambient air monitors out there is not what the communities down here were asking for through the Community Healthy Air Act. It is not as intensive and, you know, it's not going to collect the same type of data that was being required through the Community Healthy Air Act. So, you know, I don't think it's fair to say that this project that MDE is doing is going to give these communities down here the type of answers that they're looking for.
Tiny sample.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions, Tim?
No, that's good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much. Any other questions from other reporters?
We have no further questions at this time.
Okay. Well, thanks, everyone, for participating. If you have any questions, you can call me, Tom Pelton, at 443-510-2574, 443-510-2574. Of course, the reports are on our website at environmentalintegrity.org. And thanks so much, and have a great afternoon.
That concludes this afternoon's teleconference. You may now all disconnect your lines.